All right, so today we're going to take another deep dive into the world of Chronicles.
Okay.
We're looking at Session 19, Preservation of the Promise, from Dr. August Conkle's lecture series.
Okay.
This one picks up after the exciting defeat of those combined armies, you know, from Ammon, Moab, and Edom.
Right.
During Jehoshaphat's reign. You'd think things would be smooth sailing from there, but there's this kind of shadow looming over the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it comes from a political alliance with the northern kingdom of Israel.
Yeah.
And this alliance has the potential to completely wipe out King David's lineage.
Wow.
And, of course, that's the line that the Messiah is supposed to come from.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a problem.
So this is like high-stakes stuff.
Big, big problem, yeah. I mean, this is it's a really interesting case study in, you know, like how these seemingly good political moves
right.
can have these like really unforeseen and even like devastating consequences, you know. And I think the chronicler is really trying to show us here that even the best of intentions can lead to some dangerous compromises.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to being faithful to God's covenant.
Yeah. So let's unpack this whole situation. So Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, he forms this alliance with Ahab, the king of the northern kingdom of Israel. And, you know, on the surface level, it kind of makes sense. You know, like we're stronger together.
Sure.
But it sets off this chain reaction that almost completely destroys the lineage that God promised to bless.
Yeah, yeah. And it all comes down to a marriage, right? So Jehoshaphat's son, Jehoram,
okay.
He marries Athaliah. She is the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, come on. Right. This is not just any marriage. You know, she's coming from a kingdom that's known for idolatry, for just like disregard for God's covenant with David.
Right.
And Athaliah, I mean, let me tell you, she is not shy about bringing her beliefs and practices right into Judah.
Oh, so this must have caused some major problems. Like, how did the people in Judah react to this?
Yeah, well, the chronicler paints this picture of, you know, this growing tension and conflict. Mm-hmm. It's really like a clash between the two kingdoms.
Yeah.
Their religious practices, their political systems. You see, the northern kingdom had embraced Baal worship and other Canaanite deities for a long time. And to the people of Judah, this was like a total slap in the face, right? Because it goes against everything God promised to David.
Right.
You know, he chose Jerusalem. He chose the temple in Judah that was supposed to be the center of worship.
Right.
So Athaliah coming in and bringing this foreign religion, it's threatening to undermine their whole world, basically.
So Athaliah's arrival, it's not just some political marriage. It's like a clash of these really deep beliefs
right.
and yeah. values, right?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. And a direct challenge to God's chosen people.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing things escalate from there.
Oh, yeah. Things definitely escalate. So Jehoram, he's under Athaliah's influence now.
Okay.
And he does something really terrible. He purges the royal house. And, I mean, it's brutal. He's eliminating any rivals. He's consolidating his power. And to make things even worse, he brings in some of the corrupt practices from the northern kingdom. I mean, even the prophet Elisha condemned this.
Wow. And speaking of Elisha, there's that really interesting detail about the letter he sends to Jehoram.
Yes.
Because it seems chronologically impossible, right?
Yeah.
Like, Elisha is supposed to have ascended into heaven during Jehoshaphat's reign.
Right.
So how do we make sense of that?
Well, it all comes down to this thing called co-regency, which was pretty common in ancient Israel. Basically, a king could appoint his son as a co-regent while he was still alive.
Oh, okay.
So Jehoram was probably ruling alongside Jehoshaphat for a while.
Got it.
And that would have been when Elisha was still around.
So there was this overlap where both Jehoshaphat and Jehoram were kings at the same time.
Exactly, yeah.
And that clears up the timing of the letter. Yeah. But what does Elisha actually say to Jehoram?
Oh, it's not a happy letter, let me tell you. Oh,
okay.
Elisha basically gives him a scathing rebuke. You know, he warns him about the consequences of his actions, especially his loyalty to Athaliah. It's like this prophetic message reminding him that turning away from God's covenant is going to have some serious repercussions.
And I'm guessing things do start to unravel for Jehoram.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's almost like Elisha's words are this foreshadowing of what's to come.
Exactly, yeah. The chronicler makes sure we see the consequences of Jehoram's choices. I mean, he does have some military victories, like regaining control of that port at Ezion-Geber.
Right.
But overall, his reign is full of conflict. There are these raids by Philistines and Arabs. His health deteriorates. He has a pretty terrible death.
Wow.
It's like the chronicler saying, you know, worldly success doesn't mean much if you've strayed from God's path.
It's a stark reminder that even kings aren't exempt from the consequences of their choices.
Right.
So with Jehoram gone, I can only imagine that Athalia tightens her grip on power even more.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens next in this whole struggle for the throne?
Yeah.
And more importantly, the future of David's line.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. With Jehoram gone, Athalia sees her chance. She's like, all right, it's my time to shine, you know, and she goes all in on this power grab.
Yeah.
She orchestrates this incredibly bloody purge. I mean, she's trying to eliminate anyone and everyone who could potentially inherit David's throne.
Oh, wow.
It looks like the Davidic dynasty, the promise of the Messiah.
Okay.
It's about to be snuffed out completely, like lights out.
It's intense. So with all the potential heirs seemingly out of the picture,
mm-hmm.
how does the Davidic line even survive this? It feels like we're at the edge of a cliff here.
That's where things take a really unexpected and inspiring turn. You know those little details, those seemingly insignificant characters that pop up in the Bible sometimes?
No.
Well, one of them steps onto the main stage here. It's Jehosheba.
Jehosheba.
She's the daughter of King Jehoram.
Okay.
But get this, she's also Athaliah's daughter-in-law.
Wait, hold on. So the hero of our story is related to the villain. What? That's a twist I didn't see coming.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes you think about all the family drama going on behind the scenes.
Oh, absolutely. It adds a whole other layer to the story. But what Jehosheba does, it's incredibly brave and faithful. I mean, she risks her own life to save little Joash. He's Ahaziah's infant son from Athaliah's murderous plot.
Wow.
Imagine that, defying a queen, protecting a helpless baby, and safeguarding an entire lineage all at the same time.
She must have been an amazing woman, hiding a baby for 6 years right under Athaliah's nose. That's a huge secret to carry around.
It is. It's a period of hiding and waiting. But while Joash is growing up completely unaware of who he really is and what's in store for him, the high priest Jehoiada is busy working behind the scenes, getting everything ready for his return.
So even in the darkest times when all hope seems lost, there are these faithful individuals working quietly to make sure God's plan prevails.
Yeah.
It gives me goosebumps just thinking about it.
The chronicler is a master at building suspense, and he brings us to this pivotal moment, Joash's public coronation.
Oh, wow.
Jehoiada orchestrates this incredible coup. He rallies the Levites, the temple guards, key officials.
Mm-hmm.
He even uses the annual covenant renewal festival as a cover. He's bringing people together under the guise of religious observance, but secretly he's planning to take Athalia down.
Jehoiada is like a master strategist, using both his religious authority and his political skills to pull off this daring plan. You can practically see it. The temple bustling with activity, the tension in the air.
Mm.
Athalia totally clueless about what's about to hit her.
Yeah, and the chronicler doesn't hold back on the drama either. So picture this. The people are gathered in the temple courtyard. Jehoiada presents young Joash to the crowd, and boom, they erupt in cheers. Everyone recognizes him as the rightful heir. It's this overwhelming wave of joy and relief. The stolen kingship is restored. The Davidic line is safe.
What a moment. And what about Athalia? How does she react to this sudden turn of events?
She catches wind of the coup and rushes to the temple. She's desperate to stop it, but it's too late. Her reign of terror is over just like that. She's captured and executed.
Whoa.
It's justice served, but it also makes you think about power, ambition, and the price you pay for defying God's will.
It's like this powerful reminder that trying to manipulate and control things for your own selfish gain always comes back to bite you in the end.
Yeah.
But what happens next? Does Joash's reign bring peace and prosperity to Judah?
Yeah, it really is amazing how God uses people like Jehosheba and Jehoiada.
Right.
I mean, these unexpected heroes to keep his promises. It kind of makes you wonder if we're surrounded by people like that, too.
Yeah.
You know, just everyday people playing a vital role in God's bigger story.
So Joash is on the throne now. Athalia is gone. Does Judah finally get some peace and a spiritual revival?
Well, the early part of Joash's reign definitely has some positive changes. The chronicler tells us that as long as Jehoiada was alive,
yeah.
Joash did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. It's like Jehoiada was this guiding light for him, you know, helping him figure out leadership and all that responsibility of upholding God's covenant.
That makes me think about how important mentors are, you know. Like, we all need those people in our lives, the ones who guide us and push us to be our best. It sounds like Jehoiada was that for Joash. So what kind of changes did they make during this time?
So under Jehoiada's guidance, Joash really spearheads this major religious reform movement.
Okay.
They repair the temple. They beautify it. They bring back the proper Levitical practices.
Right.
And most importantly, they get rid of all those idols and shrines that Athalia brought in.
So it's like a time of national repentance, you know?
Yes.
Getting back to the heart of the covenant.
Exactly.
It sounds like a time of hope and true worship. But if I know my Bible, these periods of revival, they don't always last. So what happens when Jehoiada is no longer around to guide Joash?
You're right about that. The chronicler doesn't sugarcoat it. We see this pattern of faithfulness and then decline throughout Kings and Chronicles.
Right.
After Jehoiada dies, Joash's heart turns away from the Lord. He starts listening to these corrupt advisors. He abandons all the reforms that brought so much blessing to the kingdom.
It's almost like we're wired for complacency and compromise. You know, even after seeing how faithful God is and how good it is to follow His ways, we can still drift away.
It's true.
So what were the consequences of Joash turning away from God?
Well, they came pretty quickly and they were bad. He doesn't listen to the warnings of prophets like Zechariah, Jehoiada's own son.
Wow.
He gets proud and arrogant. And then he does something truly awful. He has Zechariah killed right in the temple courtyard.
Oh, that's chilling. To kill the son of the man who saved your life and set you on the right path? That's just spiritual blindness.
Yeah.
The corrupting power of power.
You're right. And that sets off a chain reaction of terrible events. The Arameans invade. They plunder the temple. They take hostages back to Damascus. It's a total humiliation for Judah. And it shows how far they've fallen spiritually.
Joash's story, it's really a tragedy. He starts out with so much promise.
Yeah.
But his choice to turn away from God leads to the very destruction he was trying to avoid. It's a powerful lesson. That real security and prosperity,
yes,
they come from obeying God's covenant, not from chasing our own selfish desires.
Absolutely.
It's sobering to think about leadership being such a sacred trust.
Right.
The choices leaders make, they affect everyone, not just themselves.
It's true.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the preservation of the promise, what are the big takeaways? What can we learn from these ancient stories to guide our own lives?
Well, I think there are a few things that really stand out. First, we see God's unwavering faithfulness. Even when people mess up and threaten his plans, he's still committed to fulfilling his promises. He works through unexpected people and situations to make sure his purposes are accomplished. That should give us hope and assurance that God is always working, even when we can't see the whole picture.
It's comforting to know we're not alone in our struggles.
Exactly.
God is involved in history.
Yeah.
He's working to redeem even the most difficult situations. The second thing I think we see is the importance of our choices and the consequences that come with them.
Yes, that's huge. While God is sovereign, he gives us the freedom to choose.
Right.
Joash's story shows us how following God's will leads to blessing.
Yeah.
But turning away from him leads to chaos and suffering. It's a reminder that every choice we make matters. Every choice has eternal significance.
And lastly, I think this story challenges us to think about the legacy we're building.
Hmm.
Joash could have been this amazing example of faithfulness and prosperity.
Right.
But he chose to abandon the covenant, and it led to his downfall and a lot of pain and destruction for others. It makes you ask yourself, what kind of impact am I having on the world? Am I using my influence, my gifts, my resources to honor God and bless others? Or am I wasting my potential and setting myself up for regret?
Those are big questions, and I think this deep dive into the preservation of the promise ultimately points us to that bigger story of redemption that we see throughout the Bible. The preservation of David's line, it's not just about a dynasty or a throne.
Right.
It's about God's unwavering commitment to bless all humanity through the coming Messiah. And that promise finds its ultimate fulfillment in Jesus Christ, the true heir to David's throne. He offers us hope, forgiveness, and a restored relationship with God.
It's been an incredible journey through this pivotal time in biblical history.
Yeah, it really has.
It's a story full of intrigue and betrayal, but also courage and ultimately God's amazing faithfulness.
Oh.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the preservation of the promise.
But
we hope it's made you curious and sparked a passion in you to explore these ancient stories that still speak to us today.